see politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Let's talk about rocks, baby. Salt and pepper? Does anybody remember? Rockies Insider with your Rockies Insider, Patrick Lyons, talking with some of the younger press box members, and they were not familiar with salt and pepper, let alone Spinderella. And look, I bring that up because we turned back the clock over the weekend with the 30th anniversary celebration of Coors Field. Of course, I will be talking about this Atlanta series, hard not to right now, but still wanted to acknowledge some Major League Baseball news in the game right now, but also talk about the 30th anniversary of Coors Field. Great to see Dante Bichette back. Hopefully you've consumed plenty of Dante Bichette content over on social media. The Rockies Insider YouTube channel's got plenty of that for you. But this Atlanta series, they're coming in playing really well. 7-3 over their last 10. Didn't have that great start, but they're playing a lot better. Look at their run differential. They should have an extra win because they're only at minus 7 going into this series. Monday, Ryan Feltner pushed back because of some of those back issues that he had doing some weight training 2 days after his start in Kansas City, where he went 7 innings strong, 3.86 ERA, 0-1 record, which pretty good for the Rockies because that means he just hasn't had a ton of losses hung on him against righty Bryce Elder. On Tuesday, to be determined what Atlanta is going to end up doing there, Herman Marquez on the mound. And then Chase Dolander against Chris Sale. Dolander, again, getting another big-time ace to go against him. That could be a real fun one. That is a matinee at 1:40 I have written down here. That's a strange time, but the Rockies have been doing some strange times with the 1:10 starts, like on Saturday, which was kind of nice. You got the back-to-back out of the way really early with the night game, then the day game. You get a normal Saturday night, and then you can come back for an early one on Sunday. But yeah, it's 1:10. That was incorrect from the notes that I got from that. They'll remain nameless. I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus. But Wednesday is a STEM day, so if you go out, you're going to have a bunch of kiddos in the ballpark on a school trip, so they'll probably end up filing out a little bit later. But Atlanta, look, every team that's playing the Rockies right now, it's a get-right series. They have an opportunity to get their groove back, even if they only take 2 of 3 only, right? But even if they only take 2 of 3, they can build a lot of momentum. And every team that the Rockies have played have taken at least 2 of 3 Rockies still yet to win a series. But Saturday, we turn the clock back. There was 90 themed everything. Music, they had special concession pricing. I think it was a soda and a hot dog for $5. And what was interesting was if you're at the game and you saw the scoreboard, it just looked like the scoreboard was broke. They had this grainy filter, like with an old television, a cathode ray television, not a flat screen, not this LED business, but the gigantic, heavy, you know, lopsided television. They sort of made the screen look like that just a little bit. That was fun. 90s theme graphics all around the ballpark. Very Saved by the Bell, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air kind of vibes. And Dante Bichette was there because Saturday, April 26th, 1995, was the first regular season game played at Coors Field. A couple of people have reached out saying, that's strange that they started so late, like, or that they played so many games on the road that they took them that long to get back to Coors Field. Got to remember, there was no World Series in 1994 because of the issues that were going on at the time between the Players Association and the owners. And the issues at that time were the same issues that they've always been. And they are some of the same issues that we are going to have to deal with in 2026, in a little more than a year from now, because the players were well aware that the owners were going to lock them out and say, hold on, the CBA is done, it's expired, and you can't come back to work yet. You got to negotiate with us on a new CBA, and we'll tell you if we like it. And if we do, then you can come back and get paid and do your job and have fun and live your best life. So the players, their only bargaining chip was to strike, preemptively strike in the middle of August, thinking that they'd be out for a couple days, maybe a couple weeks at most, because of course you have to negotiate, figure that out if you're the owners. You can't afford for there to be no World Series. And yet we had no World Series in 1994 because of the vitriol between the two parties, the MLBPA and MLB. And once the CBA ended after the strike, well, now the owners went back to having the power and it was a lockout. So sometimes that's why you hear work stoppage, because it means, well, both sides kind of did their own thing. Although the last work stoppage we had was just a pure lockout. It was not any kind of player strike. So because of that, it was a while until they were able to figure it out. In fact, on March 31st and April 1st of 1995, they had still yet to work out a new CBA. And on the schedule was the opening of Coors Field. It was supposed to be Rockies and Yankees. Not supposed to be. It was. A group of Rockies and a group of Yankees played against each other on March 31st and April 1st of 1995 to open Coors Field. And soon after, new CBA was signed, and they were able to play a 144-game season. And the first official, which, okay, maybe not official, but first regular season game. That is true. First regular season game at Coors Field, that 14th inning walk-off home run by Dante Bichette against Mike Remlinger. And Dante was back at the ballpark talking about it, and It was one of those moments where I thought, I wonder how long this is going to go, because things right now at the Rockies can be rough. And you know, there are some folks that cover the Rockies now that are a little bit younger, and they don't know all the details. They don't know all the ins and outs of what was going on with the Rockies in the 90s. And so, not that I worry that there's not going to be enough questions, but I thought, this might end up being on the short side. But it was a good 12 minutes plus with Dante Bichette talking about just how beautiful the ballpark is and that it's his most favorite. Beauty-wise, it is the best ballpark. You can check that video out over on the Rockies Insider on YouTube. Now, Bichette had played in 42 different major league ballparks, including one in Mexico, but 42 ballparks for a major league regular season game. He's been to a couple more since his son, Bo Bichette, is the shortstop for the Toronto Blue Jays. So he's been to some of the newer ballparks that have been erected after his career, and still Coors Field ranks numero uno. He also talked a lot about Don Baylor, sharing great stories about how the Blake Street bomb, you know, Don wanted to make sure that the opposing pitchers saw what they were going to be up against. So the Blake Street Bombers, that group of Bichette and Galarraga and Walker and Burks and Vinny Castilla, would hit in the last round of batting practice so that the opposing pitcher and pitchers could see them hit and strike a little fear in them. Dante said, much like, you know, I think Andres Galarraga would say if he ever comes out to play again. It's a shame he doesn't really come around that much. Hopefully everything is all right with the big cat. But Don Baylor really saved Bichette's career and said, you know, told Rockies GM Bob Gebhardt, this is a guy you want to pick up. Let's pick up this guy. And immediately Baylor put Bichette in as his number three hitter and stoked the confidence in Bichette right away. And, you know, he was no spring chicken. He was in his late 20s at that point. But still, Don Baylor helped navigate the Rockies in 93 to avoid losing 100 games, which is a credit for an expansion team, no doubt about it. He also helped navigate them to the first ever NL wildcard in 1995, and the quickest at that time, at least, for an expansion club to become a postseason club. Don Baylor was a huge part of that. And so after hearing some of the stories that Bichette had about Don Baylor, including knowing when he needed a day off, where he would go home, Dante would talk with his wife and be like, I'm beat. Like, I can't do this. I don't know how I'm going to play tomorrow if my name's in the lineup. And sure enough, he would look and Baylor would not have him in the starting lineup. And eventually he had to ask, like, is my wife calling your wife? Like, who's telling you this? And Don said, no, I just know when you needed a day, you know, when you were swinging at pitches that were bouncing in the grass before it got to home plate, I sort of knew you needed a day. And that's sort of the intuitive nature that not only managers have, but great managers have, like someone such as Don Baylor. And so I asked Dante Bichette point blank, Dante, should number 25 be retired for Don Baylor? And he said, yes. He said, yes, because Don Baylor set a precedent as the first ever manager of the Colorado Rockies and deserves a ton of credit for helping orchestrate that original roster. He had worked with Andre Scalarraga and was aware that he still had some better days ahead. He had a lot more better days ahead when he was with Colorado. So I would very much be in favor of a number 25 being retired by Don Baylor. I know plenty of people use the slippery slope argument about, oh, you're going to retire all these guys. You're going to retire and honor the people from your organization that were critical and in keeping, not only just keeping them alive, but allowing them to excel and were just critical parts of the organization for long periods of time. Or even if it's for a short amount of time, you could argue it was on the shorter side for Don Baylor. Still, what he was able to do to legitimize the Colorado Rockies is something that would warrant getting number 25 retired. Back when Coors Field was built in 95, it set off a somewhat of a chain reaction in Denver, which is just interesting to think about. You know, the stat always loves to get run out about Coors Field being the third oldest ballpark in the National League. And really, it was the first new ballpark in the National League, or first baseball-specific ballpark in the National League in like 30 years. Dodger Stadium would have been the last one. All the other ballparks in the NL were concrete donuts that were shared with both baseball and football. Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, Riverfront in Cincinnati, Three River Stadium in Pittsburgh, concrete donuts. And, you know, Coors Field came right after that, right after Camden Yards, and was really modeled and said, this is something that we would like to have. And we'd like to honor Mile High Stadium as well. That's where the rock pile comes from. If you've ever seen old photographs of Mile High Stadium, back when they played baseball there, back when it was, you know, Bear Stadium, when minor league baseball was played there. That was one of the reasons why the rock pile ended up coming to fruition. But when Coors Field was built in 1995, in a six-year period, all three of the main facilities in Denver were birthed, right? You had 95 with Coors Field. Ball Arena, which previously Pepsi Center, came soon after that. And then Empower Field at Mile High, originally Invesco Field, ended up coming. So, you know, Coors Field is, man, it's a baseball mecca. It's a cathedral. It really is. I was, you know, my first impression of Coors Field was as a construction site, because I have family members down in Colorado Springs that worked on Coors Field. My uncle was, you know, he knows how much I love trivia back when I was a kid, still to this day. And he said, who is the first person to ever slide into home plate at Coors Field? And oh boy, did I rack my brain and gave a couple answers that I was sure was right. And he said his name, and it was him. And he had the photo evidence. It's out there somewhere. Maybe it's not out there, but he has it. The day that they were lowering home plate in from the crane, one of his buddies said, hey, just go and slide into home plate and I'll take a picture of you. And sure enough, he did that. My cousin did some work in the old Student Movers building. If you listen to podcast earlier in the week with Noah Spyrick talking about how there's a building in Wright Field, sort of where the Sandlot Brewery is located. If you ever go in through that, I don't know if it's Gate D, but the one that's basically in dead Wright Field where the Sandlot Brewery is, that was an old building that actually predates Wrigley Field. And that just the whole thing had to be gutted. And my cousin did a lot of the electrical work that actually took place in there, which I think is fantastic. So I've got a ton of my uncle's photographs from those constructions that I think I've shared in the past. I probably should do it again here on the 30th anniversary of that ballpark on 20th and Blake Street. Now, during construction, some people know the story, some may not. Some of the construction workers found bones. They found essentially what were fossils. And there was even rumors that, and I believe this up until, I don't know, like 5-10 years ago, that, oh yeah, there was like a Triceratops skull that was even found. I think there was one that was found, or parts of it was found in the area. I think it was more like a Thornton. I don't know that to be exact, but there was not actually a Triceratops skull that was found, but there were plenty of fossil fragments that were there, and they're now over at the Denver Museum of Science and Nature. And that's one of the reasons, of course, why the mascot for the Rockies is a dinosaur. And that would be pretty great. Of course, people would dunk on it and they would mock it like some folks who mock Dinger. But I love mascots, so Dinger's cool in my book. If they did a dinosaur race, like they run the Presidents in Washington, D.C., they do the Sausages in Milwaukee, why don't we race dinosaurs at Coors Field? Let's make it happen. Why not? And you could sell the little plush dinosaurs too. It's another way to bring in some revenue. If you don't want to do the advertiser patch, if you want to be one of, I believe it's now just 4 teams that does not have an advertiser patch. Again, some fans enjoy those kind of things. But bottom line is money pays for new player acquisitions. It pays for hiring great personnel that can help make those kind of decisions and say, you know what, we don't even need to spend this much money. Let's be a little more savvy. We can be frugal and we can make things work if we acquire this player, if we get rid of that player. So the more money, more revenue that you can bring in, the better the odds are that you can invest that well into your club and your organization. So no advertiser patch doesn't allow you to do that. Of course, the TV deal, that was really out of the Rockies' hands. No fault of their doing. The fact that the building that they play in is called Coors Field. Coors Brewing Company kicked in $10 million and got the naming rights in perpetuity. So while plenty of new stadiums, ballparks, what have you, venues, can have a corporate sponsor that kicks in $10+ million every single year, Rockies simply don't have an opportunity to do that. And that was not bad business dealings, because it was really during the advent of these corporate sponsors. It was still brand new. So I don't really knock the Rockies for that. And at that time, Dick Monfort wasn't even the primary owner. In fact, his brother Charlie Monfort was much more prominent and was much more of a primary owner just behind Jerry McMorris. So you'll hear a lot more about Coors Field and some of the wonderful history that, you know, there's World Series played there. Only two games, none of which were won by the home team. But a lot of fun history, a lot of baseball history happening at Coors Field. And it just would be really nice for the Rockies organization to make some kind of move to honor that history and those players in various different ways.
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying D.C. politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Ways. I think, you know, besides just, okay, retiring numbers, that does that. That's something. That's for the elite of elites. That's it. Like the Hall of Fame is for the top 1% of players. Half of 1% go to Cooperstown. So therefore, no other player should be honored. No, that's where the team Hall of Fame fits in. And there's something interesting that, you know, I've talked about this ad nauseum, and I've got plenty of ideas of what the Rockies could do. But it was interesting that just this past year, WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment, they added to their Hall of Fame a Hall of Fame match. So, hey, this battle between these two guys is iconic, and this match we're going to put in the Hall of Fame. So this battle between Bret the Hitman Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin, they're both already in the Hall of Fame, but we can now bring them back and celebrate them again. Teams can do something like that if you did top performances and you brought guys back to talk about just a singular game that they had in a moment and say, oh my God, that was just absolutely incredible. Like, okay, you got the no-hitter for Ubaldo Jimenez. He'd probably be in the Hall of Fame on his own, but you can then also honor him a year or two down the line and honor his no-hitter. Okay, great. That makes sense. Jason Jennings in his debut, 9 shutout innings at Shea Stadium, even hits a home run. Well, he already won the Rookie of the Year award the next year, so you know Jason Jennings would probably deserve a spot in the Hall of Fame, but you can still honor the game. But what about Josh Fogg? What about the Dragon Slayer? Doesn't have that same team Hall of Fame kind of career, but definitely did have that moment in 2007. So someday, I really hope, because fans deserve, now would be a perfect time, I think, to roll that out. I don't know. Look, I'm not as well-versed on the business side of thing. Maybe there are certain numbers and statistics and studies that actually show, you know what, it makes more sense to wait until the Rockies are a little more relevant and then go and add the Hall of Fame. And now we're going to have lines down the block. It's the same thing with the black vests. I think they're waiting for the Rockies to be good again before they bring it back. And you say, well, you could be selling those black vests right now. But if you hold out, now you're going to have a ridiculous cash cow when they do get good. That could be part of the logic. Not sure. I don't know what the logic Atlanta had on Saturday by just throwing a pitch in the vicinity of Eugenio Suarez, because the dude hit 4 home runs in a game. Absolutely incredible. Increased his home run total to 10 games. First guy to do it since 2017. Was also a Diamondback, J.D. Martinez. It's crazy that Arizona actually lost that game to Atlanta, only the second time that has ever happened, where a guy hit 4 home runs in a game and their team didn't win. That's pretty wild to think. That's a big offensive explosion, and yet it's not enough to win the game. And Arizona, it's got their own little losing streak that they were able to snap eventually on Sunday. 19th player with 4 home runs in a game for Eugenio Suarez, Mr. Gino. I did have a note there for myself about the two guys who also hit 4 home runs in a game and their team lost, was at the Atlanta's Bob Horner in 1986. And the same numbers, but we're going to move some of them around. But former Philadelphia Philly, Big Ed Delahanty in 1896. Not 1986, but 1896. And it's not a fun fact. It's very much a morbid fact. I don't know if it would actually make the morbid facts if you've ever seen those videos on social media. But I figure talking about the history of Coors Field, doing the education thing, telling some great baseball stories. This one isn't great in a good way, but it is interesting to say the least. Now, Big Ed Delahanty is a Hall of Famer. He's in the Baseball Hall of Fame. He has like 3 siblings, I think. Now I gotta check this out. I believe he's got like 3 different siblings. No, it was 4. I knew I shouldn't have doubted myself. Frank, Jim, Joe, Tom, and Big Ed Delahanty. He's in the Hall of Fame. 2-time batting title winner. But Big Ed Delahanty, his death was somewhat of a mystery, because in 1903, he either fell into the Niagara River or swept over Niagara Falls. He was a bit of a drinker and the train's conductor kicked him off the train for being a drunk and disorderly. And Delahunty had like a razor on him and was threatening passengers, just acting a fool. And after he was kicked off, Delahunty started his way across the train tracks, and he either fell or jumped off the bridge. Some say he was yelling about his death that night. So I don't know if he just wasn't in the right mind regardless, but his body was found at the bottom of Niagara Falls a week after his death. Very, very sad. There's more of those kind of sad deaths, unfortunately, in baseball history. I don't think there's been a book about it. I know that was something that I had once kind of fancied, like the dark side of baseball, these stories that, you know, don't end terribly well. That's really sad to see. Did want to also talk about Jarren Duran on Saturday. Stole home for the third time in his career. Did it twice last year, but this one was actually a straight steal of home. First Red Sox player to do that since 2009. And believe it or not, same date, April 26th, 2009. So 16 years before Duran stole Saturday. On Sunday in Cleveland, one fan made incredibly insensitive remarks to him. If you watch that Netflix series on the Red Sox, you know some of the mental health struggles that Jarren Duran has suffered from and how he nearly took his own life. That's what some of those comments were. And there's just no place in the game. There's no place in the world for people to be insensitive about others' mental health. And there's some folks out there that are probably going, well, it's a real slippery slope. But I think there's common decency when it comes to people's mental health. I think we really need to know where that's at. And the days of just trying to rip on ball players or any athletes and making the comments personal, I really thought we were kind of past that, certainly after the pandemic, but instances like this still do rear their ugly heads, and hopefully nothing like this happens for Duran again going forward, or anyone else that has their own personal issues and things going on behind the scenes, because it's a game. It's supposed to be a distraction. When you go to the game or you watch on television, it's supposed to allow you to forget a little bit. It's a distraction, and for you to inject yourself into somebody else's life and to give them a bad distraction, a negative distraction, something that may stick with them for a while, that there's just no place for that. We've got to be better than that as a society. At Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons MLB, and at Rockies Insider. Check out the YouTube channel. Make sure you're subscribed. Appreciate you dropping by this audio-only edition. Giving me plenty of momentum. If you're at the ballpark, got to hit me up. My DMs are open over on social media. Throw me a follow. Toss a mention my way, and I'll come down. I'll meet you on the concourse behind home plate. It was cool actually getting to meet in person for the very first time. Paul Holden of Locked On Rockies. Got to meet a couple fans doing that too. So hit me up. I love talking baseball. I'm an addict. I really am, to my own detriment. If you only had any idea. Thanks for dropping by. Thanks for the momentum. But as I like to say, momentum, shoot, it's only as good as my next show. So of course, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points, perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.